The DigitalLifestyle.com presents the Media Centre Show, show 150, Thursday, 27th March, 2008. With TechRadar.com. I'm Ian Dixon, and welcome to the sponsor TechRadar. TechRadar is a relaunched site that was tech.co.uk, so it's great to have them on board sponsoring the show. Check out their website, TechRadar.com. It's a great site for tech news, reviews, and product information, so have a look at that. That's TechRadar.com. And welcome to show 150. So it's 3 years and 150 shows later. I never thought to get up to 150 shows, but I love doing it, and I think the best thing is being part of the community, and I love that side of it. So here is show 150, and I've got actually two interviews for you and a bit of connection back to previous shows. Most of you will know Microsoft's Charlie Owen, the program manager from the eHome team at Microsoft, and he's responsible for the SDK and the developer platform in Media Center. Charlie's been on the show quite a few times in the past, and he was here on show number 4. And Charlie's going to be talking about how Media Center has progressed as a developer platform, amongst other stuff. I also have an interview with Ted Singh from Embedded Automation, a guest on show number 1, as well as many others, and I caught up with him at CES. Embedded Automation were at EHX a couple of weeks ago, talking about M-Panel, like a wall-mounted control unit for home automation and Media Center and other stuff. So I'm going to be talking to Ted about that unit. And talking about EHX, I've got time this week, but next week I'm going to be talking to Microsoft Scott Evans about the Ultimate Installer Competition for custom installers to show off their Media Center systems. So listen out to the show next week, show 151. So I've got an update on the prizes for the Ultimate Enthusiast Competition I mentioned last week. I'll tell you about that later. I've got some email and news items. I've got quite a few new emails, so I'll crack on with those. And the first is from Mark Weston. He says, "Hi Ian, many congratulations on getting to show 150 and for 3 years of dedication you put in. You managed to get a wide range of guests, and it's always interesting to listen to. You asked for an email asking how Media Center has changed your use of media, so I thought I'd give you my story. I remember as a kid, I was having piles of video next to the TV with unknown recording programs on, and the unknown amount of space available to record stuff, and my dad having to spend weekends trying to organise it, having a little notebook to list everything only for it to become out of date in days. As I got older, I ended up having the piles of videos next to the TV, the weekends wasted organising what had been recorded, and the added bonus of my wife complaining about the whole mess. So I started to look around for options. At the time, my cablecom didn't provide a PVR, otherwise I probably would have chosen that. However, I did look seriously at ShowShifter, which was commonly available back then, but didn't proceed owing to the whole project costs. Another year or two later, and the annoyance we have to deal with videos combined with the reduced PC costs allowed me for a rethink. Still no PVR from a cable company, so I made the plunge and bought XP Media Center Edition 2005, getting it around the time that Update Roll 2 was released, September-October 2005. It took a while and a lot of TLC to get it working, but I love it. I'm still running Media Center 2005, with Vista Media Center offering no obvious benefit to me other than the pretty interface, but I am now on my third Media Center PC iteration, and it's getting better. I've got over a terabyte of storage available and a huge selection of media to play. My wife no longer has to rummage through piles of videos to find something that's probably forgot to record anyway. There is never any doubt that about what each specific recording program is about. My wife and I hardly ever watch live TV anymore, relying on series recording. My kids are growing up shocked when they can't pause live TV at their friends' houses, and they're used to a huge library of children's programs and films available instantly. I get all this and something to tinker with. I've just bought a second-hand Xbox 360 off eBay. I'll be using this to bring the usability to the TV upstairs, which had pretty much fallen out of use and didn't have the Media Center benefits. As my cable company has PVR now, it's too late. My whole family and I are firmly in love with Media Center. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Microsoft. Mark. Thanks for the email, Mark. Great email. You mentioned about Vista there. I would look to move into Vista. I've noticed a big difference. It's going there. My system is a lot more stable. The interface is better and more intuitive. So if you're going to be building a new box, I'd look at getting Vista because it works very nicely with the extenders as well. And you could have a look at the V2 extenders as well as the Xbox 360. So now to another email, and this one's from Mike. It said, I'm very interested in purchasing a Linksys DMA2100 Media Center extender. The only thing holding me back is that I cannot play DVDs on my PC and stream this to my extender TV. On show 148, you had a section stating tips on streaming DVD content around the home. I used this tip and moved some DVD content to my home server. My Media Center PC now recognises the new DVD library. The only item that was not clearly addressed is that will this show up on the DMA2100 Media Center extender in my TV? On my TV. I understand that I could get this to work using my PC, but before I venture out and purchase an extender, I was hoping you could confirm this approach, whether it be viewed on extender or not. Thanks for email, Mike. I wanted to get the community's sort of kind of input on this one. What do you think the best way is of getting DVD content onto extender? There's a couple of different ways that I know of. One that I've used before is DVD to WMV, which converts the whole DVD into a WMV file, which will play on any of the extender devices. I think the other way is you can rename the VOD files that are on the DVD to MPEG files, and they'll play on the extenders. But there's a bit of work you've got to do sometimes with that. If the DVD file is split into separate VOD files, you have to rename them or add them together or whatever. So I was wondering what listeners thought. So it is possible, but there's no easy way out of the box of doing it. I'd like to hear what you listeners think. So you can email in ian@thedigitallifestyle.com and I'll pass those suggestions on to Mike. Now an email from Tim. Hi Ian, I really enjoyed the podcast. Keep up the good work. I was wondering if your listeners experience TV stutter when they're burning a DVD. I imagine that it's because of big spikes in CPU usage. However, my system uses an E6550 CPU, so I thought it would be able to cope. Perhaps there's some way to limit CPU usage of the DVD process. Thanks, Tim. Thanks for email, Tim. I'm not sure there is a way really to do this. It might not be just CPU, it might be disk, memory, other factors. But what you can do is you can open Task Manager, go to the Process tab, right click on the burning task and set its priority to lower than normal, so that will reduce its CPU usage, but it could cause problems with the burning. The software is not designed to cope with that, so you could try it, see if it works, and like I said, there might be other factors. So anybody else got any information, let me know. And now an email from another Mike from Texas. Hi Ian, I've been listening to the Media Center show for just over a year now and recently built my first Vista Media Center PC. I'm very pleased with the results. We use it to watch a wide variety of content ranging from over-the-air HD TV, DVDs, both ripped via disc, Netflix watch instantly using the My Netflix plugin from Anthony Parks, and internet-based content items available through the showcase as well as through TV Tonic. My wife, who was initially sceptical about the whole idea, has been very enthusiastic about the feature set and shows it off to her friends. This is coming weekend, I'll be making the next upgrade to my system, including an addition of a Linksys extender. Your show has been an invaluable resource for me for educating me on the features and potential of Media Center setup. I'll continue to listen eagerly for new ideas in the years to come. That's fantastic effort, Mike. From Texas. Thanks, Mike. I do appreciate getting emails like that. They are great and it helps to keep going doing the show. So I'm going to get email of the week for Mike, and he's going to get a copy of either Big Screen Weather 2 or Big Screen Headlines 2, and you can get a trial version of these programs from a link in the show notes on bigscreenglobal.com, and if you use the discount code DIGITALDEAL, you'll get a discount on purchases from Big Screen Global. So check out those, have a look at the demos. Now I think we've got one more email, and this is from Ian Bennington. Hi Ian, first let me say you do great job, love the show, and I can't wait to download the next show every week. I have a Thermaltake DH102. On the front of the case is a 7-inch touchscreen. I have this plugged into my VGA port, my graphics card, and my TV is plugged in via S-Video port. The problem is I cannot get Media Center, Windows Vista, to work on both at the same time. The only way is to run in a window, but when I tell Media Center to work in full screen mode, the 7-inch touchscreen shows a black Windows backdrop or just a blank screen, while my TV shows Media Center. I'm using a NVIDIA graphics card, GeForce 7 series card. Many thanks for help, Ian. Thanks for email, Ian. I think this is down to a problem with DirectX that Media Center uses. This is where when you go full screen, only one of the two monitors can have the full screen Media Center, and I think it always likes to flick it back to the main screen as well. The only way that I know of that might work for you is to clone the output onto the two screens. So effectively you have the same output on both screens, on your 7-inch and on your TV, and that way the touchscreen will work. I know it's not ideal, but that is definitely the only way that I know of doing it. And I think it on the NVIDIA cards, I think it's called clone. On other manufacturer cards, I think there's different ways of doing it, but if you put the same output on both screens, then that should be okay for you. The email for the show is ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Please keep them coming in. I do like getting your email. And if you can help out with any issues raised on this week's show, please send those in, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. And I'll throw in some free software for anybody that sends in a helpful email. I do actually have one more email. And this is to do with Windows Weekly podcast from last week, Leo Laporte's Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrock. And it's a good show sometimes. I really like it. And other times it kind of gets a little bit on my nerves. And Leo's a great podcaster and a great host of many shows. But sometimes Paul seems to go off on the wrong track, I think. And last week, I think it was show 52, he seemed to really get it wrong. He totally dismissed the Linksys extenders, blaming poor performance, and basically he said to totally avoid the extenders as they had no benefit over the last generation of extenders, and they were worth avoiding because they were no good. Now, some of the issues that he raised about price, I can see. The Xbox 360 in some respects can be cheaper, but some people, as we mentioned before, don't want an Xbox 360 and prefer to pay the premium for a silent box, and I've been using the DMA 2200 for well over a month now. I've had no major issues with it. And I know that we mentioned about the transitions not being as smooth on some as the Xbox 360, but it's not really detracting from the extender experience, and music and everything else is fine, and video is fine. And I like the HDMI output as well. So where Paul totally dismissed it, I disagree on. He did mention that the D-Link unit is supposed to have a better processor and therefore better performance. But from seeing it at CES, I don't remember seeing a huge difference between the two, but we'll wait until we see those. Steve Lindsay commented about it as well, and there's a link for that in the show notes. But Martin sent an email in this from Sweden. He said, "Hi, Ian, I have a DMA 2100 running in our bedroom and it works great. Okay, the UI is not as great as the native version and the video takes some time to start up when playing Xvid. But as soon as the video starts rolling, everything is great. The quality is superb, and having access to everything on my Media Center PC is great. Last week on Windows Weekly, Paul totally trashed the Linksys extenders. It just gets you wondering, is he really using the new tech, or is he just trying tech out? Thanks for a great show, Martin." Well, like I said before, Martin, I've been using my extender for a while now, and I've had no issues of it. And to totally dismiss it, I think, seem wrong. I think you should at least live with it for a bit and see if it does the job, which it does for me. But I know some people aren't as happy as they are with, say, an Xbox 360, but then people complain about the fan noise. So you've got to take your own minds up on it. Let me know your thoughts, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Now, an update on the competition I mentioned last week. This is for the Ultimate Enthusiast competition, where you can show off your Media Center setup, and hopefully that will inspire you. Other users and new users to join the Media Center community and show off their kit too. It doesn't have to be a fantastic setup that you've got there. I just want to see your Media Center setup. So there's a Flickr group they've created. So all you've got to do is join Flickr, post your picture, and then you could be in a chance to win some great prizes. And as mentioned last week, we've got software from Embedded Automation, which is M-Control, home automation software. We've got the big screen applications, which I mentioned before, but now we've got some excellent star prizes, and That is an Xbox 360 Elite system. We've got four wireless controllers plus three games for the winner. And I've also got Steve Lindsay's donating his Zune 2, an 8GB one, his own personal one. Have a look at that link in the show notes. So all you've got to do is submit a picture, show off how you're using Media Center in your picture, have a look at the Flickr group, you'll see, you'll get the idea. And then the experts from thedigitallifestyle.com are going to pick five, and they're going to put a vote up for those five. So I want to see every listener's pictures on there. No excuses, get your picture up there. It doesn't matter how good or bad it is, just get your pictures up there. And you never know, one of them could inspire some other users, and you could be in with a chance of winning an Xbox 360 Elite. So there's some other news. A nice short one here. If you wanted to know all the keyboard shortcuts for Media Center, there's a couple of great resources on the forums on thedigitallifestyle.com from Brent and CW Kid. And there's a whole list of all the keyboard shortcuts, and there's a PDF as well. So have a look at that link in the show notes. There's a new plugin I wanted to mention. This is a remote control application that enables you to control Media Center from a mobile device like a PSP or an iPhone. It's a kind of a web project, and it's open source, available sourceforge.net. I'm going to give it a try, but it lets you basically control Media Center from a browser on a variety of different devices. So I like the sound of that. It sounds pretty good. I mentioned competition before. Microsoft are running another competition, and this is to win a digital home makeover complete with Media Center and extenders. And I quote from some of the website. It says, "Our makeover team will use Media Center and extenders for Media Center to turn one lucky person's home into a connected entertainment center. Just make a video telling us about your digital lifestyle and why you need to get connected. We'll pick the best video and award the winner a complete digital home makeover. One grand prize winner will receive a custom home entertainment system from a digital home expert, plus up to $10,000 in products and services to create a connected entertainment system." So have a look at that link in the show now. I'm interested to see some of the videos on there. And finally, I wanted to ask how you're getting on with Vista Service Pack 1. If you don't have any drivers that could cause a problem with Service Pack 1, you may be offered it via Windows Update, or you can download the Service Pack and install it manually. I have a couple of machines that I've installed it on now, and they seem to be fine. My main Media Center PC hasn't been offered it yet, and I think that's a driver problem. So I'm going to be looking at getting that on there soon. But I was wondering how you got on with Service Pack 1. I have heard some people saying that the extenders seem a bit faster when running Service Pack 1. That could be the new kernel. It could be some improvements they've made. I'm not sure. It could be just one of those things where you think it's running faster, you're not quite sure. So, certainly my Samsung Q1 UMPC does feel faster running Service Pack 1. It's kind of got a bit more of a spring in its step. And again, I don't know whether that's just me or whether it is better, but I'd be interested to hear your thoughts. So let me know in at thedigitallifestyle.com. You can keep in touch with the show via the blogs. This is my blog, there's a blog for the podcast, and you can also keep in touch via Twitter, which I, as I mentioned before, I really love, and I've had quite a lot of people recently, so a lot of listeners, so please get involved with Twitter. It's twitter.com, and my username is isdixon, so if you go to twitter.com/isdixon, you can follow me, and I'll definitely follow you back, because I'm always interested to hear what you're doing. So have a look at that. We're going to take a quick message from One Voice, and I'll be back with the first interview at Ted Singh.
Introducing Media Center Communicator, the perfect complement for Windows Media Center. Imagine walking into your home and simply speaking to play music, watch TV, read and send email, call to order pizza, and more. Now with Media Center Communicator, you have full control of your digital home using only your voice. And best of all, there is no voice training required. And built on OneVoice's Media Center Communicator, MCEach Speech Tools is a powerful speech recognition toolkit, allowing developers of Media Center compatible applications to easily incorporate speech recognition commands as features. OneVoice offers licenses for MCE Speech Tools along with its Media Center Communicator to the rapidly growing community of Media Center developers. Just say it to play it. To learn more, go to www.onev.com.
Tenzing, welcome back to the show.
Oh, good to be back, Ian. We met, at CES just a little while back, but it's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, and back on show 150 as well, so on show 1 and show 150 and other ones in between.
Well, congratulations to getting to show 150, Ian.
I didn't think we'd get that far when we sat down to do that first one over Skype.
Yeah, I think, the sky's the limit. I think the market is growing like crazy, and more people than ever are interested in, you know, the digital home and, you know, media centers and home servers. It's really developing.
Yeah, I think that's the trend, isn't it, to have not just one device, but all the different devices all hooked up, connected together that people wanted back when we started on show 150, but now it's starting to actually be a reality for regular budgets.
Yeah, I think the whole concept of digital media and digital control was just kind of like starting out, but it seems almost mainstream now. And I think I can't tell you how many people that I talk to, they want to know how they can hook things up and bring it into their own home. So it's pretty exciting.
Now, as we're recording this, you're down at EHX, and you're showing off some interesting stuff. So what is EHX and what you're showing off?
The EHX show is called the Electronic House Expo. They have two of these a year. This is the spring show that they have every year in Orlando, Florida. And we're in one of the demo areas, and we're co-partnering with a few companies, media center companies, including VitaBox and Casatunes. We're also with the speaker company called CinePro. And together what we're doing is showing a media center environment and home that you could set up. And although this is geared towards custom installers, I think the concept is really, really applicable to even just a general consumer.
Right, yeah. So, and the reason why I called you up and tried to get you back on the show is because of the launch of M-Panel, which looks really intriguing products. Could you tell us what that is?
What was happening, been happening, is people now have their digital media or their digital automation software installed, but, you know, they want to be able to control it, and they necessarily don't want to turn on their TV or open up their computer. And they wanted a mechanism to, have access to all their digital media and their digital controls. So one of the things that we just kept getting requests for was, we need a touch panel. We need a touch panel. So what we did is, first of all, we created a touch panel. But then what we went is a little bit further is we put we put an amplifier right on board. So that means you can play music from this device. It's all a Zoom player that also acts as a M control. So you get an integrated synth. Then we went even one step further. We put power over Ethernet power system on it, so that now it becomes extremely easy to install. So all you literally have to do is bring one Cat 5 cable and then attach your in-wall speakers or any speakers that you have in that room, and you're done. And you can play music, you can control your home, and by controlling your home, I mean lighting, I mean climate control, I mean your security system. So this could be something that happens right in your foyer as you get to your home, so you could turn off your security system as you walk in and start a playlist, the playlist of your choice for that evening.
So the power comes from over Ethernet. So when you say choose to play some music, does that actually play music on the device and the speakers are connected directly to the device?
Yes, that's exactly what happens. So we utilize the power of Windows and Windows Media Player. We've written an application that gives you a UI to use that and play that music locally. So you're actually bringing music from wherever you may have it stored, maybe on Media Center PC or a home server PC. You just play that music locally in the room using the M-Panel.
Right, and then it's got an interface to link into M-Control and for the home automation side as well.
Yeah, so it's just, like a one-button switch to music, one-button switch to control, and then eventually we'll, migrate it to things like playing slideshows or, it's theoretically possible that we can actually start playing videos on it, but I'm not sure if it's the best place to play video.
But it's the fact that you can go in, you can pick up your playlist, you can control your M-Control all through the one panel.
Yeah, so, you know, we're going to be launching, we've just launched it now. We're going to have some prototypes available to, you know, our close dealers, and then we're also going to start selling this in Q3. But it's, you know, I think this is just for the general audience that they can have access to the digital media. And then it's just a simple way of accessing all the aspects of your home.
I've seen these before in sort of the high-end situation. It's kind of been a part of a big high-end solution and something that was way off for sort of the average consumer.
Yeah, I mean, we are certainly targeting a very consumer end price. I mean, the price hasn't been set yet. That'll be set by at the end of this quarter as we have quantities available for the general audience. But we are not targeting high-end solutions. This is a thing that could be installed in virtually any home.
And did you say it was touchscreen or is it sort of butt control?
Oh, no, it's full touchscreen. It's a 7-inch bright touchscreen, and, you know, it has a few also some function buttons on the bottom. But I think your picture is probably on your website, but if not, it's a picture of M-Panel is available from our website as well.
Yeah, I put it up, and I'll include a link for that in all the notes as well. So do you think there's going to be sort of future ones that perhaps have wireless as well?
It's possible. Right now, that's not an initial part of the design. So, I think because a lot of the power can be derived from just wired as well, we've just focused on a wired connection for now.
Mm. I'm just thinking, you know, for ease of installation, if it's wireless, you could, where I've been using, say, a Roku Soundbridge, I could just put one of these in instead.
Right. And we'd like to be able to take this device in future versions and make it an extender, and we're looking into that possibility. What we've done, though, is make it easily fit into the media center environment, is our user interfaces are directly derived from, you know, our user interface that we already use in Vista Media Center. So if you know how to use M-Control on Vista Media Center, you know how to use M-Control on the M-Panel.
Yeah, I can see from the screenshots it does look very much like the M-Control. I think it's a great idea, and I think it's another thing of sort of joining these pieces together and add some extra functionality without being, you know, part of a huge expensive high-end system.
Yeah, I think it's all part of the ecosystem. As the ecosystem develops, you know, you can have more and more things like this. And I think we're very excited about the possibility of M-Panel. And we announced this today, and I can tell you already, I've been inundated by emails and phone calls about the product. So we're very, very excited.
Yeah,
about it.
And if so, you say it's going to be available later in the year, but where's the place to go to find out more information?
Yeah, I think for now, just contact sales@embeddedautomation.com or just email me, and I'll be happy to give you information. And we'll be updating our website to provide more and more information about this product. But today is kind of like the official launch.
Excellent. Well, I think it's a great-looking product, and I'm looking forward to seeing it later in the year.
Great. Appreciate it, Ian.
Well, enjoy EHX. Thanks, Ted. And now to the interview with Microsoft's Charlie Owen. Charlie Owen, welcome back to the Media Center Show.
Hi there, Ian. How are you today?
Great. And this is going to be the 150th Media Center Show. So it feels like I've been doing a long time. And other times it feels like I haven't been doing so long. And so welcome to show 150. And you were back on show number 4. So you've been around for the show for quite some time as well.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. 150 shows. Did you ever think it would go that many?
Not really. I thought we'd get two or three and see how it goes. But I kind of got drawn into it now, and it's one of those things that's part of my life. And I wake up in the morning and think about interviews and and do the and decide what I'm editing before I go to bed. So it kind of takes over your life.
Oh man, that it does.
But it's really great being part of the community, so that's which is the thing I like doing the most.
Good deal.
So I thought what we're going to do today is to kind of go back over 150 shows. Is we'll do a recap on each show individually. No, maybe not. But we'll go back and have a look at kind of Media Center, how it's changed, and
perhaps we should also mention, for just in case anybody doesn't know you are, what you are and your role and how sort of Media Center development fits into that. So just give us a quick background on Charlie Owen.
All right. So I'm a program manager on the Windows Media Center team. I own a platform and our public SDK. So been on the team working on Media Center since version one. I was a beta tester of our very first version and then joined the team shortly thereafter as a program manager. So kind of been there, done that, got the t-shirt.
Yeah. So you've seen all the versions of Media Center and the area you kind of focus on, the platform.
I have run every single version of Media Center since its inception. So
you've seen the journey that it's gone through from day one then.
Yeah, it's been fun to see this product change in reaction to customer feedback, morph into things that we didn't know that we would be doing in the beginning, as well as mature as a product. I think Windows Vista certainly represents the most mature version of Media Center that we've done to date, and I'm pretty excited about our future as well. So
we'll go. I want to talk about the development side of things because I know that's an area that you focus on. But let's talk about the product in general then. So you've gone back from the first version. You mentioned that there's areas that you didn't expect to be doing that you're doing now. So what are the kind of areas that Media Center's changed from the original vision?
So what has changed from the original version? Well, the original version was designed as a product that would be used in very small apartments or very small dorm rooms. If you think about a college student who doesn't have a lot of room to have a TV and a DVR and a computer, its original kind of world was going to be there. And what we quickly found out was that people who probably had college-age children were buying this for their homes to power like home theaters and things like that. So we were very nicely surprised by that adoption rate, and it grew very fast from there. Actually, grew at a rate that was much higher than we kind of expected. So that's just one of the classic history points of kind of started out as this student-oriented thing, but quickly became much more mainstream, much quicker.
And I suppose the rise of the whole home theater is also sort of come about at the same time as when Media Center was starting. Home theater was separate, discrete components, whereas now a lot of people's home theaters are based around Media Center and Media Center extenders.
Yeah, well, back before Media Center existed, I certainly used a computer in my home theater. I don't have one of these big giant home theaters. We basically have our living room as our home theater. But we were using computers there with custom software that we would get from a variety of places. I remember being pretty active at avsforum.com. Even before Media Center existed, there were third-party applications and stuff that made that world a little bit of an easier place. It was still quite geeky, but it could certainly be done. People were, at that time, I would say in the 2 to 3 years, maybe even a little bit further back, before Media Center was a product out in public, people were using personal computers as high-end video scalers to upconvert, for example, DVDs to a higher resolution. Back then, that's when 50-inch plasma TVs were, $25,000. And a computer was a pretty good, effective scaler, and much cheaper than the higher-end Faruja components that you might associate with that high-end video scaling. So Media Center just kind of fits into that niche quite nicely, even though it wasn't necessarily our original intended area that we would ship in.
And the first versions didn't really have a software development kit either, did they?
So the very first version that we did not have a software development kit. It did have something called Media State Aggregation Service, which persists to this day. But it's a C++ unmanaged thing. Couldn't really do anything but pay attention to a couple of things that were happening in Media Center. And it was really more of a service for ourselves to use more than third parties, although some third parties could leverage it. It wasn't until we got to the second version of Media Center where we introduced our hosted HTML object model that persists to this day. And with our Windows Vista version, we finally got around to exposing the UI framework and the managed code object model that we use ourselves in the product. So it's kind of been no platform, a hosted HTML platform, and now with our Media Center markup language, third-party developers can use the same tools that we use to create their own experiences that have just as nice an animation, just a nice look and feel, and you don't quite feel like you've left Media Center nearly as much.
And so when you first started on the SDK, who was the target audience then for Media Center developer? Was it third-party developers, sort of small enthusiasts, or were you going for sort of the corporate developer?
So I would say that the corporate developer was pretty much off the radar map. We're not a corporate-facing product. We're very, very much a consumer-oriented product. So I would say that the biggest reason for living for our platform was the big partners that you see in online media today. These are big media conglomerates that own lots of content and so on and so forth. But since it is a public platform, we began to see this rise of what I call the enthusiast developer. They're doing it out of a love for the product and making that Media Center do specifically what they want it to do. And over time, we've become, we've embraced more of that developer, more so, I would think, than we have what these large companies want to do. Now, it just so happens that what both of those folks want in a platform are mutually beneficial. So if I create a platform feature that is for a big media company, the chances are it's going to also be something that the small developer also wants. It's very rare that I find that their requests are mutually exclusive. But we are taking more of an enthusiast approach to what we should do in our platform. So finally, we also use our own public platform to ship additional features of the product, such as internet TV here in the United States. So I think you'll continue to see us do those types of experiences in other locales as well.
All right. So internet TV, I saw that when I was over at CES, the web streaming and video streaming thing that's built into Media Center is actually written using the same tools that a third-party developer could write an application.
Exactly.
That's pretty good. That so the SDK for Vista, we should talk about that then. So going from XP to Vista, you mentioned about HTML to and then onto a new platform. So what's the difference between developing for Media Center XP as to developing for Vista?
So well, the biggest difference is a shift in what languages you use. For hosted HTML, you're obviously using HTML for the visuals. Sometimes a third party application such as Flash for the visuals, and then JScript or JavaScript for the data and logic. Starting with Windows Vista, you can use Media Center markup language for all of your visuals and manage code, something like C#, for your data and logic layer. We also did some small, tiny amount of work that would enable very simple web experiences using just Media Center markup language. I would say the internet TV has to do quite a lot of interesting things to actually exist in our web platform. For example, the web platform doesn't even support cookies today. So it was just really a very, very basic web application model for Windows Vista, simply because we didn't have time to go do more in that time frame.
So a web application means that a developer can write an application that doesn't need any local code. All the Media Center markup has been delivered over the web.
That is correct. So just like a web application today, web apps either output HTML or XHTML or DHTML, they could also output Media Center Markup Language, or MCML. And our full managed code object model is available to those class of apps. So that's how Internet TV works. Basically, the web application is an ASP.NET application that lives on the server, and it outputs MCML that can be rendered on the machine.
Right. So that's a good way of delivering content down to Media Center without having to sort of do heavy footprint of installations and get assemblies and DLLs onto the local machine.
That is correct, but it's really geared much more towards the lighter weight experiences. Again, the web model is not nearly, I would not even say that the web model is a true web model as much as it is a way for you to bring MCML from an HTTP address to the local machine for rendering. It's not much more complex than that in its capabilities. So I usually, when people say, oh, I can just do a web application, I usually tell them to tread rather softly and make sure that they kind of understand the limitations that we have in the web platform today before they really commit to doing something that's really deep and rich. It could be much more complex than you want it to be.
Right. So if you're going for a simplistic approach of doing your first application, maybe the local method is easier to develop and to debug to get started.
I would say that's generally a good thought process to go through. Although the approaches are pretty different. With a web app, you're going to be using some technology on the server side like ASP.NET. Although you can simply put loose MCML files up on the server and do some interesting things there with our managed code object model. But I would say that definitely for Windows Vista, the locally installed assembly that contains logic, data, and Media Center Markup Language is pretty much the way to go for Windows Vista.
Mm. And the whole thing of Media Center Markup Language and Windows Media Center Presentation Layer applications means that the applications are as rich as any part of Media Center, as opposed to HTML, where it was just kind of a web-based approach.
Yeah, for the host HTML model, we actually leverage the rendering engine from IE, the MSHTML control from Internet Explorer, and so there is some rendering thunking going on. Plus HTML, if you look at what HTML, it was never designed. It has no concept of animations. Now, it's been extended over time to be able to do some of those things, but it still is not a first-party citizen. So, for that purpose, it can work, but it's not a great user experience. On the other hand, what makes Media Center Markup Language really great is that it's designed from the ground up to be used with a remote control as input, as well as from the ground up to have animations as a native part of its language. So the combination of those two things are very powerful.
And things like screen scaling as well, I've noticed that, you know, it's built into the language so that, you know, it reflects whichever window state that you're in and whatever your screen layout is and that kind of
thing. Whereas HTML is not, so you have to write some JScript to be able to apply those scalings, so you don't get nearly as smooth a transition most of the time.
I think that where the innovations come from, have you been surprised by the amount of innovation from the third party and sort of hobbyist and small single developers? Because there's some great stuff coming out from these guys.
Yeah, I think that they're the bomb. I think they just do great work. I don't get to spend as much time as I would like using those individual applications. I'm usually just too busy of getting developer feedback and trying to take action on that for subsequent versions of our platform. But I really am thrilled that developers, especially the enthusiast developers, have kind of picked up on what they can do in Media Center. And I'm really enthusiastic about what they are producing. I think the small developer or the small shop has the best growth potential to come alongside Media Center and to really make a difference in delivering features that consumers want that may be of too vertical a market for Microsoft to bite off, which is the whole reason we have a platform, is so that we enable consumers to get features they like, even if we can't deliver it ourselves.
Because, I mean, I think the great thing about having the platform there is that you're delivering web content or any content down to the TV and away from the desktop PC. So, especially through an extender, you've just got, you know, this great scope to be able to write applications directly for the TV, and very rich ones as well.
Correct.
And when developers are starting out down the road of writing Media Center applications, where do you normally point them to get started?
So obviously they would download the SDK. They need to install that on a machine with some flavor of Visual Studio, either 2005 or 2008. We typically recommend Visual C Sharp 2005 or 2006 Express Edition because it's free and it works really well. Usually I point people, if they're wanting to do more of the UI stuff, to load up what's called MCML Sampler. That's available in the program library after you install the SDK, and go exhaustively through. It's about 130, 140 examples of how you craft a Media Center markup language to do the things that you want it to do from a visual standpoint. And if you just kind of jump in and start coding, a lot of times people will be frustrated because they really haven't delved that deeply into MCML. But for those that do want to kind of just deep dive right into the pool, we do have a white paper that ships with the SDK called Step by Step. And it takes you through the steps that creates a very simple application with four very simple buttons that call a Media Center API to display a dialog box. So it's kind of the hello world on steroids that kind of gets you a good starting place. Now, it also happens that one of our application templates that ships in Visual Studio is the exact same result that you would get if you walked all the way through the step-by-step. But it really all depends on what you're going to do and what you want to build as to where you would start. But those are the basic starting places.
Mm. And you've got a great resource, haven't you, on the Media Center Sandbox?
Yeah, I mean, if you want help, that's free. Discuss.mediacentersandbox.com is a great place to hang out. A lot of enthusiast developers are on that site and freely give of their time because they love the product and love what they can do with it. So it's a great place to go hang out, meet some people who are really rock stars with this, that have picked up on developing for this, and get your questions answered. And occasionally I show up once or twice a week to just kind of see how things are going.
But what impresses me when you go on there is the speed of response to some of the questions. You can post a question on there, and seemingly straight away you get a really good and really technical answer.
Yeah, it's pretty quick as far as how the community's kind of jumped in and made that their own. We at Microsoft kind of take a hands-off approach until somebody kind of sends us a direct message and says, hey, I would like for somebody to answer this question. We kind of let the community run itself and manage itself. And I've been really pleased at how the community has done that.
I know we can't talk about anything that hasn't been officially announced or anything like that. But are there areas you'd like to see the software development kit and the whole platform go to enable developers to build better applications?
Always. We constantly like to improve our products. That's just kind of a general Microsoft thing. Media Center in particular really cares about both the usability of our product and how customers are happy with our product. And that extends to the platform and the SDK. So, like you said, we can't really talk about a lot of those future coming things, but we are hard at work and making both our product and our platform a better place for consumers and developers.
I mean, one thing we haven't probably got time to go into now, and listeners can check out previous shows where you've been on, is there is no real sort of drag and drop GUI environment for developing Media Center applications. But I think you did a good job at probably explaining why in the past. But just give us a quick sort of summary then of why there isn't a drag and drop tool for developing these applications.
Well, the answer is, can be long, but in a short way, We're really focused on making sure that the platform is really, really good and tight and solid. Visual design tools usually come much later in a platform's development. To this day, you can write a managed code application with nothing more than Notepad, for example. It wasn't until later that we began to see the integrated design environments, like Windows Forms and stuff like that. So we're still very early in the lifetime of Media Center markup language and our managed code object model. We'd rather focus on bringing features into that platform that developers need to have to really write robust apps than spending time on a visual tool designer. Usually when you create a visual tool designer, what you will begin to get is feedback on how well the visual tool designer works rather than feedback on the platform itself. And we think it's very much very important for us to continue to get feedback on the platform itself. And we're fully happy with deferring any kind of visual design tool to a later date, realizing that that will automatically exclude some developers who don't really enjoy writing XML or writing C# from scratch. We do provide IntelliSense in the product for managed code object model, as well as Media Center markup language. So that will speed development. And the good thing about that is it kind of forces you to learn at a very intimate level how Media Center markup language works. You haven't just drag and dropped a bunch of controls onto a page and then ended up with this black box of XML that you really don't know how to manipulate to do the really custom things that you'd like. So is that a good enough answer?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think once you still start on the road of development, if you can really get your head around how the Media Center markup language works, it offers an amazing amount of potential.
Yes, it does.
And there's other technologies coming out from Microsoft and other development platforms like XAML and Silverlight and all these kind of things. You think in the future that we're going to see these kind of technologies linking together and maybe having some kind of Silverlight client that works on Media Center and sort of joining these technologies up? Or are you still totally focused on Media Center being delivered for the sort of 10-foot experience?
Well, I think Media Center markup language will continue to be our first choice for a native Media Center experience. With that said, as these other technologies get maturity and market share, there could be a change at some point in the future. I don't foresee that happening anytime soon, and it would certainly, I don't think, be in a replacement mode. It would be in addition to. For example, we still have the hosted HTML object model and that way of delivering apps today in Windows Vista, even though we have something that is actually much, much better than that in the product. So it's hard to tell what the future might hold, but we're going to continue to invest in Media Center markup language to make it better and the overall platform.
I want to talk about the extenders now, and just if there's any kind of tips you've got for developers that are coming up with Media Center applications and want to target extenders. Is there something they need to do specifically for them, or is it just general good Media Center markup language principles?
I would say that it's the latter. If you have good Media Center markup language fundamentals, then those apps should work really well on extender. Certainly the Xbox 360 extender, they work with full fidelity. There are a few caveats that you kind of have to be aware of if you want to make the app work pretty flawlessly on the extender. But we really strive to make sure that you can write it and it just works on extender. So I think for those folks who are really targeting Extender, they can discover those resources either in the SDK or the couple of white papers that are out there. But it's our goal, and we like to hear feedback if it's not working, that you just write it once and it runs no matter what extender is attached.
And what kind of applications do you want to see that haven't come out yet or that developers aren't currently targeting? What do you want to see from the sort of the community?
So I would say that I would turn that back and ask you, Ian, what kind of apps do you want the consumer to build? I think it's interesting that you would ask me. And really, I don't really think of that in that vein. I don't develop platform features in response to what I think developers ought to create. I tend to listen to them and hear what they want to create and then build platform and features that enable them. Mm-hmm. So what would you want to see the community to build?
Well, I think the one area that hasn't sort of been developed much, and perhaps, you know, because the hooks aren't available yet, is a lot of the interaction with the TV side of it. So, you know, the actual tuner side, so developers can perhaps do their own, you know, stuff around the object model of the guide and the tuning of the channels and picking up the channels and displaying them perhaps in a different way. There's a lot of great applications that for sort of bringing data down from the internet or different sources, but I just think there's probably not as much on that side of things. But other than that, I just like to see applications that you know, just bring stuff to the TV. So, you know, anything that, like big screen headlines and all these kind of things that just bring in data down to the TV, that's the kind of things I like seeing.
Well, I wouldn't say that you and I are too much unlike there. So we do have a pretty extensive TV API in the product that is there for those developers.
Mm. And I guess then developers are wanting more from the SDK than to comment upon the sandbox is probably, I mean, send a sandbox is probably the place to do it, so you can hear those requests.
Yeah, and sandbox is a great place because that feedback is easily consumed by the team. We can go in there and look at it. It provides one place.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I'll include the URLs for that and the link in the show notes so developers can have a look at that. But I think Media Center as a platform is separates it a lot from other offering, and I think it's what drew me in initially was the fact that you could code something up and make something look nice and works well on the TV.
Yep.
Well, I want to thank you for your time today. I know you've got to shoot off to another meeting, hopefully planning future releases of Media Center. But it's great to get you back on the show. And
yeah.
I hope we'll see a bit more of your blogging, and because we do enjoy that. I've missed you not getting many blogs. And also, I noticed you've got a Twitter account, so you need to keep that up to date so we can follow you on there as well.
Yeah, I got the Twitter account, and I think I've used it like once. So... I'm not sure.
Well, it's seriously addictive when you get into that.
Yeah. I can't have any more addictions.
Yeah, and I've got my Media Center machine talking to me via Twitter as well, which is really fun.
That is cool.
Well, many thanks for your time, Charlie. It's always a pleasure having you on the show, and we'll get you back on show perhaps 200, and we'll talk about the next SDK.
All right, you bet. Thank you so much for all you do, Ian. You totally rock.
All right. Thanks, Charlie, and I'll speak to you soon.
All right, talk to you later.
Okay, thanks to Charlie. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to everyone that stuck around, especially if you've listened from show 1 to show 150. That's great. Don't forget, keep in touch via Twitter, the blog, Facebook group, and see you in the forums. Don't forget to post your pictures in the Flickr group, and I'll see you next week. And if you're into FriendFeed, I'm on there as well. Perhaps talk about that next week. Bye.